Session number 787, Reel 5.
Brigadier Bright, Reel 5.
Now, you were in Egypt for really quite a short period of time prior to returning to the Military College of Science at Woolwich. How did this posting arise?
Because I'd already passed the examination to go to onto the advanced class at the Military College of Science before I left England. While I was still in the 5th Battalion, I took the exams. I didn't know whether I had passed or not when I was posted to Egypt, but I was notified when I was with the 6th Battalion in Egypt that I had passed, and I was therefore to join the 56th advanced class in October 1937. So, of course, I had to be returned to England in time to do this.
What was the relevance of this training as regards your duties in the RTC?
Well, I'm not quite clear in what way you mean.
Well, we talked about coursework at Woolwich before, and you explained that it was a general engineering course, the first one you did, and you said that it didn't really have any direct relevance to RTC activities, it was just general engineering. I just wondered whether, since the RTC was about to lose you for another period, and quite a long one, after all, of training, whether this was a good investment from their point of view.
No, they didn't think so. They certainly thought that I was lost to the Corps for good. Because, you see, the advanced class was open to all arms of the service. And after you had passed through the advanced class, you were going to go in technical employment of some sort. And unfortunately, in those days, the Royal Tank Corps took very little interest in the design of its equipment. If it had taken any interest in the design of its equipment, it would have encouraged people to go on the advanced class, where they would get into design departments and inspection departments. But in fact, it didn't. It accepted the equipment was given to it and really didn't consider that it was the Corps' responsibility to design that equipment. Why not? It's difficult to say. I think possibly it may have been one of Brigadier Hubbard's blank spots. I don't know. But there is no doubt at all that the Corps had little interest in the technical side of the design and development of its equipment. When I passed, or rather when I took the exam for the advanced class while I was still the 5th Battalion, I was very friendly with the adjutant of my battalion, quite naturally, as I was a technical officer, and we had a lot to do together. We used to play a lot of squash together, and we were very close friends. And when he knew that I was determined to take the examination to go on the advanced class at the Military College of Science, he said to me one evening, "Of course, you're no further use to the Royal Tank Corps," just like that.
Isn't that curious?
Well, looking back, very curious, but that was the way it was.
Yes. I mean, who better qualified than a highly trained engineer working with the Tank Corps to play a major role in design and development?
That simply wasn't recognised. Mm. It was a very short-sighted view, and as I say, it can only, I think, have probably come from the very top, the sort of directing staff, who thought that the business of the Royal Tank Corps was to fight with the equipment with which they were provided and not to have any say in what they got, which would seem most extraordinary looking back now.
It would also imply that they had no grounds to complain about what they got, since they showed no special interest in participating in the design and development role.
I think that is so. I've already said that we didn't complain about the equipment we had. We did the best with what was given us. We didn't complain about it. We did, as technical officer, I used to put in defect reports regularly about defects on equipment. But one got used to the fact that owing to the shortage of money between the wars, little ever happened to remedy these defects. And I think the whole attitude was one of acceptance.
What perspective did you have anyway? Because as an inward-looking corps, I presume you would have known little about tank development in other countries. So, you know, I mean, how do you decide whether a tank is of good, up-to-date design or whether it has deficiencies? Unless you're looking outwards, you don't draw conclusions like that.
I don't think we did. I think we still considered somewhat arrogantly that our tank force was better or certainly as good as anyone else's, and therefore we didn't really seem to be concerned. It's extraordinary to look back at it now, but I'm sure that's right, that we were not really concerned with the future development because we thought that it was going on quite satisfactorily and somebody else would produce us the equipment, and it wasn't our responsibility to really do very much towards its improvement. Mm.
Now, when you joined the Inspectorate of Mechanization in 1940, was there any kind of induction course that you went through?
Not really. I spent about 2 weeks at headquarters, and I was told to go through the files to find out the kind of work that went on and the kind of records which were kept of inspection, which I did. And I was then posted up to Birmingham as assistant to our resident inspector who was already there.
In general terms, could you define the function of inspecting officers?
Yes, it was to organise and administer the actual inspecting personnel who were civilians posted out and resident in firms doing government work within the area, and also to settle all technical questions which were beyond their competence. That is to say that if the resident engineer on the inspectorate staff said that something was not acceptable and the firm making it were not satisfied, then they would appeal to the inspecting officer, who would then decide as to whether it was in fact acceptable or not, and his word in general was accepted as final. So that as an inspecting officer, you spent your time going round to visit the various firms where you had resident personnel, seeing that they were working under satisfactory conditions, and also settling any problems or any disputes there might be between them as the inspectors, inspecting authority, and the firm as the production concern.
Was the post of inspecting officer and its functions of a new development, or had there been these for many years?
Oh no, this had been going on for many years, but prior to the war there had been within the army only one real inspection department, which was called the Inspectorate of Armaments, and they had subsections which dealt with armoured vehicles. But just before the war this was split off and there was an Inspectorate of Mechanisation to deal with armoured and other vehicles, and the Inspectorate of Armament continued to deal with guns and all equipment associated with gunnery.
Apart from having your communications with the civilian manufacturing companies in the Inspectorate of Mechanisation, did you also have good lines of communication with the Tank Corps itself, who were the customer, as it were?
No, not really. One merely reported back to our headquarters at Chislehurst, and they had communication with the War Office and with the relevant departments there, but the liaison wasn't very close, and this is one of the weaknesses, I think, of the pre-war organisation and the early days of the war, before the various liaison organisations were set up to remedy this deficiency.
Can you put your finger on the kind of problems it would create, or did create?
Well, I don't know that it created great problems, because in those days, in the early days of the war, everybody was so busy about their own concerns that they really hadn't much time to liaise with anyone else. It was a very, shall we say, disrupted time in many ways. The organisation of a nation at war had not yet taken place, and things were still very much piecemeal in the early days of the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does the appointment of a person with your kind of background, service and technical background, imply that it was recognised that there was a defect in the existing organisation, and you were one of the people through whom they were seeking to fill it?
I think that is so, because the inspectorate was, to which I belong, was reorganised very considerably when Colonel Gross became the chief inspector of mechanisation, and he was a regimental tank corps officer. He was not a technician, he was a regimental tank corps officer, and he was therefore much more concerned to see that the requirements of the tank corps were looked after within his inspectorate, and he was responsible for taking me away from doing routine wheel vehicle inspection work and making me the inspecting officer at Vickers, because he considered, and I think now quite rightly, that there should be a Royal Tank Corps officer suitably qualified to inspect the production of tanks at Vickers, who were the major armament production firm in the United Kingdom.
Okay, tell me about your work with Vickers then, the range of duties, the kind of problems you had to deal with.
Well, although I was responsible for the inspection of all tanks that came out of Vickers, I also had to be responsible for all government inspection in the surrounding area on Tyneside and Teesside. I was therefore responsible for the inspection of the manufacture of armour plate in the steelworks on Tyneside and Teesside, and I was responsible for the inspection of all components for tanks or other vehicles which were produced within my area. I used to spend about 2 days a week in the works in Elswick, inspecting the Vickers tanks and making sure that my inspectors had all the facilities they required and were carrying out their duties satisfactorily. The remaining 4 days of the working week, as we then worked a six-day week, I spent touring round, seeing the steel manufacturers and the component manufacturers to make sure that the conditions under which my staff were working were satisfactory, and also settling any points of dispute between them and the manufacturer. It was, in those days, a post of considerable responsibility, in that what the inspector said in general was accepted. For example, when a new design of gun was put into the Valentine tank, which was being manufactured by Vickers, I refused to accept it, even though it conformed in every way to the drawings which had been laid down by the design department. I wouldn't accept it because it wouldn't eject satisfactorily. Vickers said that they knew how to make it eject satisfactorily, and I told them to alter the drawings and make it do so, which they did. I subsequently got authority from the government design department, but I had the tank rectified first and got authority for it afterwards. That sort of thing you could do under the conditions then reigning. You would not be able to do that today.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me any other examples of the kind of disputes which arose?
Well, minor malfunctioning of equipment, which was being developed at a very fast rate in those days, could be rectified at the inspector's request and under the inspector's authority, which is an abnormal condition in that under peacetime regulations authority would have to be sought, because this frequently meant spending a certain amount of money on the redevelopment of the equipment. But in those days it was accepted that it was a time emergency, and therefore the inspector on the spot had far greater authority than he had ever had before or is ever likely to have since.
How difficult did you find it to do this job from the point of view of the prevailing pressures on civilian manufacturing companies to produce as much, as quickly as they possibly could?
With Vickers it was fairly easy, because they were a firm well versed in the manufacture of military equipment. They were extremely helpful, and they also knew how to recover the costs of whatever they did. Therefore, they didn't question any requirements which the inspector might lay down. They met his requirements at once, because they knew that in due course they would be paid for the work that they had done. Now, with firms who were not used to dealing with government departments in time of emergency, they might have been very doubtful as to whether they were going to recover the costs of what they did, but Vickers never had any doubt, and they were extremely helpful. At no time can I ever remember my requesting them to do something and they asking me to justify my request, or that they hesitated in meeting my requirements.
Apart from inspecting, did you have any scope to initiate? I mean, there are two kinds of things. One is, as an inspecting officer, you see something, you're not happy with it, you say, please put it right. But the other one is initiation, a more original contribution.
Well, not in a major way, possibly in a minor way. For example, when a new gun was introduced into Valentine, or when major modifications were carried out, I always went and fired the gun myself on the ranges. And if I didn't like the arrangement of the storage of ammunition or anything like that, I would say so, and that would usually be modified to meet my suggestion. I did function to that extent as a user quite unofficially, because all new or modified equipments that Vickers produced that time, I always fired myself on the ranges to make sure that it would be satisfactory to the members of my corps who would subsequently have to fight the equipment. Mm.
You've already explained that these appointments to inspecting officer positions were not particularly new, that they had a history of some years. Had many of these kinds of posts, to your knowledge, been filled specifically by RTC personnel before?
Yes, my predecessor was an officer in my own regiment, and he had been resident at Vickers Armstrong before the war. When he handed over to me, had the same kind of authority as I was able to exercise when I was there. But I would doubt very much whether anyone could have wielded the same authority under peacetime conditions. Mm.
Were there ever any occasions in your work as an inspecting officer that your dealings with a civilian manufacturing company were less good or less fruitful in their outcome than your experiences with Vickers?
I think it was more difficult, perhaps, to deal with some of the firms who were not accustomed to making the kind of product which they required to manufacture in aid of the war effort. For example, on Tyneside and Teesside, there were a number of mild steel manufacturers who had been making boilerplate for ship construction and so on, who were turned over to the manufacture of armour. They didn't always realise the importance of sticking rigidly to the steel analysis which was required to produce the armour qualities which were necessary in the finished product. They were allowed a certain flexibility And if they exercised this and slightly altered the analysis of the steel that they manufactured, it could be that the armour would thereafter not perform satisfactorily. This happened in one particular instance with one firm. Normally, they would ask the inspecting officer before they varied the analysis of the steel or its heat treatment in any respect. In one particular instance, a firm of steel manufacturers did not do this, and subsequently, their armour did not meet the required performance. As a result, on the authority of the inspecting officer, the entire batch of manufacture of that steel had to be scrapped. The firm then realised that had they consulted the inspector at the time that the steel was being made as regards its analysis, this would not have happened. It never happened again. This again shows the responsibility that the inspecting officer carried and how much faith the firms in the area placed upon his knowledge, advice and help.
What conclusion would you draw from that particular case, that it was that this problem arose due to the inefficiency of the company, or because it was trying to pull a fast one, or what?
No, I would think that the firm was entirely honest, but they didn't realise the very close limitations there is on producing armour. If you're producing boilerplate for ships, you can probably vary the analysis of steel considerably. You cannot vary the analysis of armour if it is to meet a required performance. Mm.
What was the name of the company?
South Dalaman Steel Company.
Good.